It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now to the model used in how to respond to active shooters when the unthinkable happens. The tactic of run, hide, fight is suggested by the FBI and its safety resources, but there is skepticism on whether it saves lives. Join in by calling 800-642-1234. Your questions, your perspective, email ideas at WPR.org. Juliet Kayyem is a former assistant secretary with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, a senior lecturer in international security at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and the author of books on crisis management and disaster response. Juliet, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Good morning. You say the prevailing advice for mass shootings, the run, hide, fight protocol is not working. What is the problem?
I want to begin this conversation by acknowledging how insane this conversation is, right? That we are having a rational conversation in a society like ours about how to protect ourselves from the mass shootings that are occurring daily, essentially, in the United States. But this is where we are. And there are lots of things we could talk about to try to prevent this, but they are going to happen until we're able to succeed. And so, for 30 years, certainly since Columbine, the advice and training that has gone on in schools and large facilities and movie theaters has always been this mantra: run, hide, fight, in that order. Run if you can, hide if you must, you know, fight as a last resort, because it was believed that engagement with the shooter obviously would be more harmful. And that essentially you're just waiting for law enforcement to come. So either run or hide till law enforcement helps you. And I have to remind people that was part of the post-Columbine thinking, because remember the high school students were all put into the library, and that's mm-hmm. where the shooters came in and most of the fatalities happened. This is a conversation that no one wants to have. We're seeing more and more evidence. We saw it in Club Q. We saw it in a mall in Indiana. And now we saw it this weekend with the second dance hall when a young man engaged the shooter. He had already killed 10 or 11. This was the second dance hall he went to. Whether some sort of engagement, some sort of fight isn't also how we should be training for this. If you can distract the shooter, then you might be in a better position, or at least delay the kind of harm he can do, simply because the pace that these killings are occurring and the weaponry that allows these kinds of occurrences, it's just, there's not enough time for, even if you have good law enforcement, which we've seen not true in some cases, it's just not even clear there's enough time. Law enforcement in at the dance hall in California, law enforcement was there in 2 minutes and 10 seconds, and he had already shot to kill over 20 people. Mm. I mean, that's a fast response, right? I mean, so anyway, that's the thinking. No one wants to be here, but it is certainly part of some of the training that's going on in terms of how we should engage.
Zooming in for a moment, you mentioned Club Q in Colorado. In November, the unarmed man fought back, stopped a shooter. Yes. He had served 15 years in the Army. What should people without that type of combat training do?
Exactly. So, and it is a great point. And then in California, he was a young guy who looked physically strong. I was just looking at the videos of it. Look, this isn't for everyone. Okay. I mean, I am willing to admit that. I admit in my writings about this, that I'm not even prepared to tell. I want to tell my kids to do this, right? You tell your own kids, run if you can, right? So, but I do think that if the opportunity, or if you are in a situation where available. And as you see, you know, are you behind the shooter? Are you in physical proximity to the shooter? Is the shooter distracted? That is where the fight comes in, right? In other words, so I've been thinking about this because I find this the most horrific, as I said, conversation to be having in what we hope was a rational society, is we used to say run, then hide, then fight. And I think what you're starting to see is maybe it's run and hide and fight. In other words, just whatever you can do, do it, because you can. We just cannot depend on, you know, a sort of law enforcement. Forget Uvalde and everything we saw there. And look, it's also going to be site specific. Young children don't have this ability, but a dance hall or a club or a movie theater, there might be this possibility.
You mentioned Uvalde massacre, where the reports now say systematic law enforcement failure in Uvalde. What can we learn from that?
Yeah. So, I mean, part of it, so it's two different issues in this sense. I think the run, hide, fight is really focused on the victims or potential victims, in other words. And it was based on an expectation that law enforcement could, one, get there in time, and if they were there in time, was qualified. We didn't see that in Uvalde, obviously. On the police front, there's just almost no explanation for what happened in Uvalde. I go through it. I've been in this space a long time. In my head, like, why didn't any of those hundreds of people just say, this is madness, we're going in, and there's going to be a lot of lessons learned. But that was not proper training. As we saw in California, as we saw in a lot of these instances since, police officers are trained to go in immediately. That's what they should do. And when they don't, it is a total, you know, a violation of the public, of any public trust that we have in police officers.
You talk about an emphasis on resistance and distraction. Yeah. Can you give some examples of what that might be like as... Yeah. In a situation like this?
Yeah. And it's so, because I mean, this is the reason why it's so site specific. So there's three sort of case studies that we are all looking at. One is an armed civilian who shoots the shooter. That's going to be, you know, this idea of a good guy with a gun is a mythology. If in America it were true, that the more armed citizens we have, the safer we would be. We would be the safest country in the world. And we're clearly not, in terms of our handgun and gun violence. So there is that possibility that a trained civilian would also be armed. We have found in our studies that obviously the more weaponry there is, the more likely there is both for death and also friendly fire. So this is really about unarmed civilians. So engagement, as we've seen in some of these cases, happens when the shooter is distracted. He falls, he's reloading the gun, he's searching for a particular person. In those moments, his sights are not on the mass killing, right? His sights are on either a particular need or fixing the gun. Those are the moments when unarmed civilians have gone in, and we've seen that. So in Club Q, that was exactly the moment, was the gunman was distracted, the former army officer rushes him, he falls, and now you've bought yourself some time. And that was when, you know, famously the performer there steps on the shooter with her heels. All you're trying to do is buy yourself a little bit of time. In the dance hall version, this was that we saw at least the pictures of, that was something I've never seen before. That was like literally an unarmed civilian approaching someone with a gun and just saying, I'm not going to let you do this right in this room. And that just takes a level of bravery not everyone has. So I don't want people listening and saying, oh my God, I couldn't do this or whatever. This is what is happening in my field, is just an examination of all the options available. I still want people to run if they can. Hiding may be a problem if there's not an exit. And if there is an opportunity to fight and there's a person who is able to do it at the right time, yeah, do it. But remember, run, hide, fight was always that fight was like, don't do it. And now I think that there's growing evidence that it has to be one of the alternatives.
Rearranging the order, perhaps, of those words as well. Juliet Kayyem, an authority on Homeland Security and Crisis Management, senior lecturer at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Call in with your questions about the run, hide, fight template in light of recent massacres. Share what you think should be done during active shooter situations, the drills that happen at your school. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss the latest research and how to protect yourself and others in the event of a mass attack, active shooter situations in public spaces. Call in with your questions, your comments. Share your plan for emergencies, 800-642-1234. We have Juliet Kayyem, former Assistant Secretary with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the author of books on disaster preparedness and crisis management. Juliet, the National Rifle Association has a motto that says the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. We just heard you contradict that. But when you hear that type of slogan, what is problematic about it to you?
There's a couple things problematic with me. I mean, and I want to be clear to listeners, because I think the American public, and I've seen the polling, is pretty smart and wise about responsible gun ownership and the type of guns that should be on the streets. The NRA and others are fringe arguments and do not represent the community I know that are gun owners, and certainly most gun owners are responsible and are for responsible gun ownership and recognize there are certain guns that should not be on the street in any civilian context. And so when the NRA says that, they are basically promoting an industry. Remember, the NRA represents the gun industry. It does not represent gun ownership and wants more guns on the street. So the data is absolutely clear. You look at us comparatively to other countries, and you look at us over time in terms of the number of guns that have been on the streets, as well as when we have had things like assault rifle bans for that 10 years in the 20th century, that we're greater gun ownership in public facilities leads to greater escalation sooner than anyone would ever want. A permissive gun behavior that should be resolved through yelling or honking of horns, right? I mean, we used to do that when I was growing up, and does not resolve the active shooter case. There's one, the mass shooting case. I just, of all of our mass shootings, and we're now at a couple dozen just in January. There is one case that I know of which an armed civilian took out the shooter. One, right? It is either law enforcement or it is something, you know, or it just ends or the shooter takes himself out. That's what we've put the American society. I mean, that is that data point is what the NRA runs with. And it's irresponsible. I mean, what they should be focused on, of course, is we have a type of weaponry on the street that is killing lots of people quickly. And if you can just focus on speed, in my world, that's what I focus on. You know, in a crisis.
But in a crisis, you freeze. Speed
is. You freeze.
Yes.
Right. So that's the problem. So you want to be able to buy time. And if there's individuals in the room who can buy time, in other words, distraction of the shooter, that seems to work really well as well.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for just a moment. Juliet Kayyem, former Assistant Secretary with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, as we examine what people to do when facing a mass shooter incident, 800-642-1234 to join in. Turning back to schools, how should parents tell their young children to respond to mass shootings in schools? What would you suggest?
It's a different environment in schools, because actually schools have been, a lot of them, you know, obviously have done active shooter drills. There's debates about how effective those active shooter drills are. And part of it is going to be age and the geography of the school. My kids are at a at a urban public school. It's a single building. Their only real choice is lockdown in the classrooms, which is what you want to do. And schools have become more sophisticated on that. If it's a more campusy type high school and kids are able, you still want them to run just simply because they're the target at this stage. And then this is all, as I started at the beginning, I have to say this out loud many times. I recognize these are absolutely horrifying conversations to be having as a society.
Schools have become more sophisticated. In what way?
They're basically looking at layered defenses at this stage. So that's what we do. You're not going to be able to shut down a school because schools have to have open access, but schools have, in particular, high schools have gotten better. One is a lot of them do have guards or other armed people. They have locked front doors so that after the kids are in the classroom, if you're a visitor, it's harder to get in. Gating and guarding and lighting all do the trick. You have active shooter drills and lockdowns in classrooms. Those are some of the features that high schools have put into place. It hasn't solved the problem, as we've seen in a number of instances, but that when you say what has been done, there's sort of been an approach to layered defenses. None of this pales in comparison to a society that was actually willing to use political capital and to focus on both the issue of guns and, of course, mental distress in young boys at this stage.
Juliet, thank you for joining us and sharing your research. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Juliet Kayyem is a former assistant secretary with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, senior lecturer in international security at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.